Good evening and welcome to this regularly scheduled Tuesday, July 14, 2020, Shelburne Select Board meeting, which I now call to order. The next item on the agenda is to approve it. Is there a motion to that effect?
So moved.
Moved by Jamie.
Second.
Seconded by Kate. Any discussion? Hearing none, those approving, please signify by saying aye.
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 That's unanimous. The next item is to approve the meeting minutes of June 23 and also June 30. In the case of June 23, we have an edit that I'm suggesting on page 4, mid-page. And that regards a comment that was attributed to Allison. Page 4. And the comment says Allison Myers confirmed the changes to, and I'm suggesting that we change that to Allison Myers sought confirmation that. So rather than confirms, I'm suggesting we substitute sought confirmation that. Is there any discussion, any other amendments or changes? Hearing none.
I'll move to approve as amended.
Jamie moves approving as amended.
I'll second.
Mike seconds. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those approving, please signify by saying aye.
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 And those opposed, nay. The ayes have it. The next item are public comments. Mac, have you got one?
I think we need the June 30th minutes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay.
The next item of the June 30 minutes. Are there any comments about the June 30 minutes? Is there a motion?
I'll move to approve the June 30 minutes.
Jamie moves approval.
Second.
Kate seconds. Any discussion? Hearing none, those approving, please signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. And those opposed, nay. The ayes have it, thank you. The next item indeed is public comments. Begin with Mac, do you have any? Apparently not. Joyce? Hearing none. The next item are select board comments. Mike, do you want to start?
I have none this evening, thank you.
Oh, I tried to talk, but I was muted, I guess.
And that was
Joyce.
Yes, by all means.
I don't know if this is the appropriate part in the meeting, but I would simply like to request that since I'm an abutting neighbor to the Martindale node, that if the node remain and be removed from the zoning actions that you're taking this evening.
With all due respect, Joyce, we don't entertain commentary in public comments on items that appear later in the agenda.
Okay, I guess I have a lot to learn.
Which this item does. So if you're okay with it, why don't you hold that comment until we get to that point in the agenda?
Will do.
Thanks, Joyce. Are there any other select board comments, Mary?
Happy Bastille Day. And I also wanted to just remind folks, this is gonna come up later, so I'll be very brief. Please wear a mask. I feel like masks are like stop signs. We all need to stop at stop signs. We all need to wear masks.
Thanks, Mary. Jamie?
Just quickly wanted to thank the fire department for a very quick response to the fire that happened due to lightning out on Bishop Road across from Beaver Creek. Could have been a very bad situation and was handled incredibly as usual. So just a thank you to the entire department for responding so well.
Thanks, Jamie. And that goes, of course, without saying on all of our parts. That could have been pretty disastrous given the ambient condition. So thank you. Kate?
No comments tonight.
I have none either. Any other comments from any discussion or questions from the public? Hearing none, the next item is the town manager report. Lee? Lee?
Yep. Unmuting. Thank you. Just a couple of quick times. Indeed, it has been a very busy week or two with police, fire, and rescue in many different respects, and grateful for everyone's team effort and mutual aid as well. We got a very nice letter from the Blow family on Timber Lane praising all the crews for their prompt and thorough and professional response to their house fire that happened recently. And it comforted them greatly how things were handled and how things were saved. And in response to ongoing concerns about rates of speed, however real or perceived, the police department has done quite an array of directed patrols, and not just sitting on the side of the road in a marked cruiser where it's obvious, on the usual roads, Mount Philo, Marset, Bacon Drive area, and the speed limits found by radar are well within the normal range. So there's always going to be one outlier, but there's no excessive speeding, no tickets have been given, there was no cause for concern of any sort. So just letting you know that police department's on it, they're watching out over things, and what they're finding is well within what would be expected to be a normal range of speeds being traveled or motorist care at stop signs. Thank you.
Thanks, Lee. Any questions from the board?
I guess just one request on the speed data. I assume we're maintaining that data somewhere, and to the extent we need to look at that down the road, as everybody knows, we do have this discussion periodically, and I think we can be a little data challenged at times when we get into this topic. So it'd be good to just have that at the ready whenever we need it.
Agreed. Police are keeping it, and I've got a copy of the recent readings as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's a good idea, especially when it doesn't come from the speed cords across the road.
Right.
I assume that's radar readings, right?
Mostly radar. There are some speed tubes being placed at various locations as well to try to keep track.
Oh, okay. Okay, that's a great idea. Any other questions of Lee or discussion?
I actually wanted to ask about the reported stealing of signs along that area. Do you know anything about, does the police know anything or any information about that?
I learned about it the same way everyone else did. It's certainly nothing the town asked for, sought, or requested. I've been informed that maybe signs are back up tonight, placement signs, or if somebody took them down to mow the strip along the road and put them all back up, but we don't know anything about it. Of course, there's no footprints, tire tracks, or fingerprints to search out for, so.
Okay, thanks.
A good number of them are back up this evening when I came through.
Good.
I don't know that all of them are, but a substantial number of them are. We've expressed some concern to Lee, as some of you know, and the question remains as to what purpose anybody had to remove them at the time they were removed. And it seems clear that it was not a town action of any kind. So it's as mysterious to see them back. Hopefully those are not just replacements that people had stored away. Hopefully those are some of the originals that were removed in what at the time could only be considered an act of vandalism, and raised obviously a lot of questions about our community. But tonight going through, I thought virtually all of them were back. So any other questions of Lee? Any other discussion? Hearing none, the next item is a public hearing on proposed zoning amendments regarding form-based zoning, subdivisions, and historic preservation design review, which is a continuation. I don't believe we need a motion to continue, do we?
Well, it might just for the record that you have a motion to reopen or continue the hearing. And I know that Dean Pierce is prepared to give an overview of the various items before us.
Is there a motion to continue?
So moved.
Second. Jamie moves.
Second.
And Kate seconds. Any discussion? Hearing none, those approving, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. And those opposed, nay. The ayes have it unanimously. Dean, you want to lead us into it?
I would be happy to, Jerry. Excuse me, sorry. I'm going to, if it pleases the board, run through some slides that would basically give context. I can provide more details if people would like, but I'm going to keep it a little bit high level given where we are in the process. Lee,
if I think you should be good to go, Dean, to yep. From your screen.
I think so.
I did change that setting.
Okay.
Well, we're waiting. Good evening, Tom and Sarah. Good evening, Peter.
So I'm hopeful that people can see an introductory slide.
That works. Thanks.
Okay. Got it.
So to recap, the hearing tonight is a continued hearing relating to essentially two proposals. Actually more than two, but two initial proposals, the first of which related to form-based zoning and the second of which relates to the historic preservation and design review overlay section of the regs. That was forwarded to the board back in November. There's another piece of the package that has been blended in with the first two, but I'm referring to is proposal three that had to do or has to do with the subdivision regulations, and that was forwarded to the board on January 9. I've said this before, I'll say it again. Proposal two, which has to do with the historic preservation and design review overlay district, could be handled independently if for some reason everything else requires more discussion. The other two, I feel, should be in tandem. And then also, as just about everyone knows, a significant element or what's considered a significant element, although a focused element of proposal one has been warned for public hearing in 2 weeks' time. So I'm not going to spend really any effort getting into that. I'll touch on it, but I won't get into it in detail. In connection with the design review overlay district, just so people know what I'm talking about, the design review overlay district has as its purpose preserving and enhancing the historic and architectural significance of the village and Sheldon Falls area. I didn't bother to pull up a map, but if people would like to know the boundaries, I can share that a little bit later. But the purpose of the overlay district is to really to try to retain the integrity of the architectural features of the buildings in that area. It's a section of the regs that goes back to the early 90s, that I believe. And the intention is to keep development that would be at odds with that from happening. The changes that were developed and forwarded to the board have a pretty laudable purpose, and that is to simplify and shorten the review process that some applicants need to go through. While doing that, another benefit is to reduce the burden both on staff and on boards, specifically the Development Review Board. And we feel that that can happen while maintaining the quality and the standards of the review, because the review standards aren't proposed to be changed. The process or the steps that development goes through would be modified. And excuse this kind of simplistic diagram, but I just use it to convey the idea that there are three categories of developments, three major categories. Some of them we will review as site plan amendments or site plan applications or conditional uses. And that process easily takes 2+ months, 2 or more months. There are some that are a little more simple, but those can take 3 weeks. And even the very simplest applications for design review can take about 3 weeks to culminate. And that's because largely they have to go through a multi-step process. They submit an application, it goes to the Historic Preservation Review Commission, then goes to the Development Review Board, then gets approval and a permit. What would happen under this proposal is that for those simple projects, there is no longer the need for the applicant to take their proposal to the Development Review Board, and instead it's really a process of being reviewed by the Historic Preservation and Review Commission. And what that can do is to reduce the amount of time in those cases from several weeks to a couple of weeks. The way that this is accomplished is through amendments that consist of adding a sentence in an existing paragraph that says that applications will go to the board or to the administrative officer when you qualify under Section 1535. And Section 1535, the text of which you've all had for some time, so I won't go into it, is spelled out and is shown on the screen. Moving on, because I don't want to take too long in this, form-based zoning, which you've heard me speak about several times, has as the purpose providing set of regs that put more emphasis on the design and appearance of buildings than the uses that occupy those buildings. That's one kind of shorthand way or thumbnail way of describing what form-based zoning does in general, and that's reflected in the purpose statement for the overlay district. The purpose of the changes that have been presented to you are multifaceted. They range from simple renumbering because of a suggestion made by a consultant who was assisting the town and the Planning Commission on this process, to changes to several different sections that are parts of the form-based zoning. That includes a map that we call the regulating plan and the standards that have to do with how buildings are designed and what their setbacks are and things like that, as well as lot setbacks or what amount to setbacks. It also changes to the public realm, when that public realm is the area between the front of a building and the edge of the right-of-way. There are some changes to parking and landscaping, signage, and definitions. And one that I've mentioned before is the language that would be added to address previously developed sites, that is sites that already have an approval and under the conventional zoning. And there's a big question, well, what happens if an applicant wants to take that property and put it into form-based zoning? How do those rules apply? And right now the regulations don't make that process clear at all. As a reminder, it's an overlay district. Overlay districts are typically mandatory, but this one is optional or opt-in. And it does confuse people sometimes because that's not the way that overlay districts are ordinarily used, but that's the way this one was used. It was adopted initially in 2016 with some changes in 2017. And as I mentioned, there was a Vermont-based consultant, Brandy Saxton, who helped with this second set of revisions. Talking a little bit more about the parts, the entire document has been reformatted. The regulating plan, that's the map, that's been clarified. There's been some extraneous text taken off. Building form and lot standards, I've talked about those. Those are the standards that govern the buildings that people have as items on a menu for development within the different character districts. Parking requirements, as mentioned, some of the parking requirements have gotten more flexible. Landscaping, screening, and lighting have been clarified. A lot of the suggestions that Brandy Saxton made really amounted to better editing of the document and removing redundancy. Signage has been updated, and then, as I said, previously developed sites. I've mentioned this one before, I won't dwell on it, but the redevelopment section is language that I feel is something that will make a significant difference. People have questions, please let me know. The proposed changes to the subdivision regulations are really a companion to this form-based zoning proposal. because the form-based zoning regs would be set to a different place in the bylaw, their numbers are changing. So some of it's just very basic. It's to correct the references that are used in the definitions. But another more substantive part of the proposal is that by changing some of the definitions that are included in the subdivision regulations, it would mean that developments that go through the form-based zoning process are not subjected to what some people might think of as redundant review under the subdivision bylaws. The result of that would be to streamline the development review process, which could also create something more of an incentive for people, for folks to use the form-based zoning overlay district. In a nutshell, the way subdivisions are defined in the regulations right now includes several different types of developments that go beyond just splitting of land. And if the amendment is approved, some of those would no longer have to go through subdivision as long as they're approved under the form-based zoning regs. And just to illustrate that a little bit, and I believe this has been in your packets, the references I mentioned have to do with the articles. And then the text in there says, except those reviewed and approved under Article 22. And if Article 22 is approved, then that would hold. And when I say these should be done in tandem, there's really no point in adopting the subdivision regulations to change the references without doing the bulk of the form-based zoning, or at least some of it, because then we would be creating a disconnect in the regs. And that essentially boils down to three definitions: the definition of subdivision, the definition of minor subdivision, and the definition of major subdivision. I would be happy to talk about any other aspect of that in more detail. If there are questions, I'd be happy to talk about any of the material that was included in the initial Planning Commission memo that came out, I believe, in May. And I would also just ask the chair of the Planning Commission, Jason, if he had any additional comments.
Not in terms of summary, that was good. Thanks.
Thank you, Lee. Any further comment, Jason?
Nope, I'm good.
Is there anyone in the public who's attending who would like to ask a question of Dean or make a comment? Does anyone on the board wish to comment or ask a question of Dean or Jason? Lee, do you want to sum up?
Thank you. Yep, that was a helpful presentation, Dean. Thank you. So as you've seen, and you've seen these several times now, there's an array of proposals. It seems like it would be helpful to get these in effect. The motions, the draft motions you have in your packet would accomplish what I think everyone has agreed to, at least temporarily, which is to remove the so-called Martindale frontage zone or node from this packet. And as Dean did note, we do have a public hearing scheduled for that singular item at our next meeting to take that up separately and determine how to dispose of that. So the motions that Dean prepared presumed that that piece would not be included in any potential approval this evening.
Without objection, is there a motion following those laid out by Lee in the first place to close the hearing?
I'll move.
Someone like to make a motion? Thank you, Mike.
Second.
And a second, Kate, to close the hearing. Any discussion? Hearing none, those approving, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. And those opposed, nay. The ayes have it unanimously. Following, is there a motion to approve changes to the historic preservation design review process?
I move to approve proposed changes to the Shelburne zoning bylaw, specifically the modification of section 1530Z and the addition of section 1535, both relating to the historic preservation design review process as previously warned.
Thank you, Mike.
Just off the top of my head.
I'll second
that. And a second, Mary?
Thank you. It's actually 1530.2. That's the section that we're modifying.
Well, you probably meant that, didn't you, Mike?
Exactly. Well, Mike actually read the motion that was in the minutes, and he mentioned both 1530.2 and 1535.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll second it.
Got it.
Correct. Do we need to restate it, or are we satisfied with how it's been presented to us by Lee?
It's fine from my
perspective. Thank you, Mary. Thank you. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those approving the motion as presented to us by Lee regarding the changes in the historic preservation design review process, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. And those of us opposed, nay. The ayes have it unanimously. The following motion is to approve changes to subdivision definitions, the text of which Lee has provided us as example.
Just to clarify, Dean helpfully provided these motions for us for tonight.
Oh, I'm sorry. I should have attributed it to you, Dean. All blame and commendation and rewards and whatever goes to you, Dean. Is there nevertheless, notwithstanding the author, is there a motion to approve those changes?
I'll move.
Kate moves.
I move to approve proposed changes to the Shelburne subdivision bylaw, specifically the modification of definitions for subdivision, major subdivision, and minor subdivision as previously warned.
Thank you, Kate. And a second?
Second.
Jamie seconds. Any further discussion? Any questions, discussion on the part of the public? Hearing none, those approving, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. And those opposed, nay.
Aye.
The ayes have it unanimously. Thank you. Lastly, there is a motion to approve, as suggested by Lee's in Lee's presentation, to approve form-based zoning changes, but exclusive of the proposal to remove one of three frontage zones from the regulating plan and update associated references. Is there a motion to that effect?
I'll move.
Kate moves to approve proposed changes to the Shelburne zoning bylaw, more particularly the proposed revisions to Article XV11.A as previously warned, but exclusive of that portion of the proposal removing one of three frontage zones from regulating plan and updating associated references, which are the subject of a hearing set for July 28, 2020, our next scheduled meeting. Is there a second?
I'll second.
And Mike seconds. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those approving, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. And those opposed, nay. The ayes have it unanimously. And finally, Lee, do you want to address the attached amended fee structure?
Perhaps Dean would like to speak to that. I think this is a simple update to make sure that projects proposed under form-based zoning also have an application fee attached to them. It was not as clear previously.
Yeah, that's correct. In the current situation, the fees are applied based on the other review. There's no separate or additional fee because of form-based zoning. With the approvals just voted upon, there would need to be a standalone form-based zoning fee, and that's what the proposed edit does.
Thank you, Dean. Is there a motion to adopt these two additions to the town's development fee schedule as presented?
I moved.
Mary moves.
Second.
And Jamie seconds. Any discussion? Hearing none, those approving, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. And those opposed, nay. The ayes have it unanimously. Thank you, everybody. Thank you especially to Dean and the Planning Commission, Jason, which you so ably and enthusiastically lead for the work that went into these various proposals. And thank you especially for the recent summaries, which I found to be extremely helpful, and no doubt my colleagues and the public will as well. Thanks very much for all the effort. The next item is to receive new zoning proposals, read PUD buffers, and consider warning a public hearing. Lee, do you want to lead this off?
Yep, this is, Planning Commission's been busy working on other items, and perhaps Dean or Jason would like to explain the nature of these. And then again, the request is whether to warn a public hearing to consider these next proposed changes.
Jason?
Well, unless Dean had something ready to go, my summary would probably be much shorter. Dean, you have anything?
Well, I would just draw attention to the memo that was included with the packet. I want to make sure people can hear me, correct?
Yeah, is it the memo dated June 11th?
The memo dated June 11th, that's correct, yes. So the format is similar to one that was used in response to the request from the chair on delving into why the changes were being proposed. Which parts are considered major, and so on. So as to the question why they're being proposed, this is one of the types of proposed amendments that comes in response to inquiries made by property owners, in this case, the owner of the AutoMaster, who was concerned about the impact the regulations would have on his plans to install stormwater improvements, and some of which happen to be inside what's called the PUD buffer. As part of the conversations, the Planning Commission also gave some attention to something that would be fairly new in the regs, and that has to do with retaining walls. I would submit that the proposal is significant largely in its entirety. Adding the definition of retaining wall in the text is certainly, because it's new, something that would, I think, be considered significant, but also having specific requirements relating to retaining walls is significant. The effect of the proposal is to add retaining walls and fences to the list of features that are allowed within PUD buffers when they're reviewed. Certain types of PUDs in the mixed-use district. So it is an idea that has been implemented in the regs in a fairly focused manner, in that it affects one PUD type in one district. As far as edits, like I said, the certain kind of tweaking of the text, some clarifications, frankly, that I have suggested because of the experience with the Burris matter, which involved an appeal of a denial of a permit in a PUD buffer. And it struck me as something that it would be a good thing to do while making edits to a section on PUD buffers. As far as which things could have alternatives, certainly that the Planning Commission could have expanded the concept, the Planning Commission, to more districts or more PUD types. It could have added a definition to PUD buffers, but had different allowances as far as the height of walls that are allowed. It could have done some variations on the theme, basically, but it went forward with the proposal that it thought was responsive to the request made by the property owner and could be accomplished, and consensus could be developed in a fairly short period of time. This is an area where there certainly could have been a larger discussion about PUDs. Some of the ideas might have been applied more broadly, but I think it would have taken the Planning Commission conceivably much more time to get agreement on how those would be implemented in multiple districts and PUD types rather than just in one district in one PUD type. The amount of input in the case of the buffer allowances, really the principal input came from the property owner. The retaining walls we received limited input. I may have fielded one question outside of a hearing or public meeting, I should say, having to do with it. So it was not a topic that engendered a lot of community discussion. And really the folks who would be most affected by this would be owners of properties that are subject to PUD restrictions already, and potentially the abutters, people who own properties that are next to the PUDs, where as a result of the amendments, there may be a structure slightly closer to their boundary than would be allowed before. You've all had this memo, so I'm paraphrasing it really for the benefit of people in the audience, but if there were questions about parts of it, I would be happy to try to address those.
Thank you, Dean. Lee, do you want to, are there any questions first of a general nature about the specific proposal as Dean has described it? Hearing none, Lee, do you want to provide us with your commentary and recommendation?
Well, of course, it's up to the board how to proceed. My question, as I've discussed with Dean, was, as he alluded to in his own comments, of why, if we're going to tackle PUD buffers, why not address other directly related issues that we already know have been of concern in other districts and in other areas? It seems to me, and I understand fully the idea of a tightly wound approach to one particular request. From a planning perspective, it sometimes is helpful to broaden that inquiry a bit while you're at it and tackle several things simultaneously, but Dean's explained their rationale for that. And ultimately, it's the select board's call if you'd like to run with this. And if so, let's pick a date and warn a hearing.
Now, are there any comments from the board itself? Mike, do you want to lead off?
Well, I had the retaining wall language, is that new or is that tweaking previous language, Dean?
The retaining wall language is new.
Okay. And you said that this could potentially affect adjacent property owners or abutting property owners?
Well, the memo is somewhat summary in nature, but in terms of parties, people who could say, well, this affects my interests, the main players would be the people who own the property that could be allowed to do something or restricted from doing something, and then whoever owns the land next to it. So if right now we have a PUD and there's a buffer where only very limited things are allowed in that buffer, the next door neighbor can look across their property line and understand that not much is going to change. With this type of modification to the regulations, as more things could be possible in the buffer, they're the ones who would experience it. I'm not saying that the impacts would happen every time someone does something, or that every time something is done, there would be a significant negative impact. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that if we're trying to identify who could feel some impacts, those are the obvious ones to key in on.
Okay. Another question I had, and the Burris issue was sort of playing out just when I got on the board. That was a fence within the buffer, is that correct?
Yeah, that particular application or issue had to do with the request to erect a fence in the buffer. And currently, there is no allowance for fences in buffers in residential PUDs. So that particular application was denied, and it was the denial was upheld, and it eventually went to court, and there was a settlement of sorts reached. So it was resolved through a settlement, and the person got their permit for the fence, but the regulations in that particular situation have not changed. Okay. And they would not be changed by this proposal, because this proposal keys in on the PUDs that are used in the mixed use district, the commercial or mixed use PUDs in the mixed use district. So it's really affecting the commercial part of town, not residential areas.
Lee, regarding your comment about a broader consideration of the implications Well, I mean, for everybody, Jason and Dean, I mean, we could still do that. We could still undertake that. I guess the issue would be redundancy. I wonder how Jason and Dean and Lee, I mean, I understand what you're saying, but nothing prevents us from doing both of these things, approving this and also a broader consideration of applications, you know, in other PUDs and in other areas. So I'm curious if Jason, is that, I mean, what is your, do you feel like that's redundant or extra work or?
Well, to expand beyond what was done, it would be extra work. And I think at the time, the reason that we, well, not I think, the reason that we focused on this one was in considering it across the broader town and other areas, it was definitely going to be a bit more involved and take a lot more time than what was in our queue at the moment. So addressing that for the rest of the town is something that we have on our radar. But it was more an attempt to try and get something in place. We can get feedback from this. There might be things we learn if once this is implemented that we could include in how we proceed with other areas. So that's where our minds were.
Okay.
If I can just add quickly, the proposals may seem conceptually very simple, but when considering applying this to more situations, more PUD types and locations, it does get conceptually more complex because there are different approaches or different mechanisms that the regs could use to, quote, solve the problem. And the Planning Commission was able to get consensus on the problem in this setting much more readily than they could looking at the whole town and weighing things like, well, do we even need a PUD buffer? Or should the PUD buffer simply be smaller? Or should the problem be solved through a waiver mechanism? So there are some different options that make it more complex when you start talking about multiple zones. And the other thing is that the Planning Commission, I can say from my vantage point, has been struggling with dealing with these individual requests versus trying to take an approach where they look at breaking down and creating a new bylaw that's this integrated set of regulations that gets rid of redundancy. So this idea of the unified bylaw. And I think they sense that anytime they spend looking at things like PUDs across all districts would take away from any efforts to try to make progress on a unified bylaw, which I think is what they really see as the greater need.
Okay, thank you.
Mary?
Thank you. As I understand it, the only things that would be allowed in the buffer zone of the mixed-use PUD, in addition to what's already allowed, the landscaping kind of thing, would be fences and retaining walls?
Yes, that is the proposal. That is proposed. So the scope is narrow and limited to those things.
Thank you.
Kate?
So I was on the Planning Commission when this was first sort of entered into. My recollection is that one of the points of this was to try and establish a little bit more parity from a design standpoint in the outcomes achieved under the form-based code versus the outcomes achieved under the very suburban, car-oriented, sprawl-intensive underlying zoning, which the form-based code is intended to circumvent. Although, unfortunately, since it's only adopted as an optional overlay, it doesn't have as much tooth as we had all hoped it would. But that's an issue for another time. So that was sort of the genesis of this. It was an attempt to try and, in the short term, create a little bit more parity between what is allowed under the form-based zoning and what is allowed under the underlying zoning, because certain pre-existing historic PUDs are kind of bound by the rules from this earlier phase of zoning. And so we were trying to just create a little bit more in the spirit of what is intended, what is the overall vision for the Route 7 corridor. So that was sort of the idea behind it. And on the other hand, I very much believe that there are, we over-regulate the PUDs in other districts. I wholeheartedly agree with that. And I think that our zoning regulations have a huge number of problems, as a matter of fact. They're cumbersome, they're redundant, it's this thick, right? You know, I mean, it seems just silly on a lot of fronts. And I think the unified bylaw that I know is not a discussion for tonight, but I think it's a very worthwhile thing that has been raised as a justification and as a topic for, just framing this decision and deciding to take action on it. So I guess I would say that I would support this urge my fellow select board members to consider it as well.
Thank you, Kate. Jamie?
Again, I served on the Planning Commission for many years, so I'm familiar with this balance of trying to be responsive to one of the biggest business owners in the town with a request here. And, you know, it does strike us as sort of incremental, modest change to the bylaw, which is not really the big picture transformational type of regulatory reform that I think we all want to see sooner rather than later. But I think there's merit to it. I think this is a step in the right direction. It's not as much as we'd all like to do immediately, but I think it's appropriate for us to consider it at a future hearing and try to just be efficient with the hearing. It doesn't strike me as controversial necessarily, and I'm not prejudging it, but I do think it's appropriate to move it forward to a hearing.
Is there a motion?
I guess
do we have a date?
Yeah.
Well, if you wanted to move this along, the earliest possible date would be August 11th. We could get a hearing notice done in time for that.
I would move then that we have a hearing on this proposal on August 11th.
That we accept it and schedule a hearing for August 11th. Thank you, Mary. Is there a second?
Second.
Jamie seconds. Any further discussion? Any commentary or questions from the public? Hearing none, those approving, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, nay. The ayes have it unanimously. Thank you. And thank you, Lee, for a very helpful, useful discussion on your part. The next item is the somewhere in here, right? Is the next item is the proposed executive emergency order requiring masks in all public buildings or businesses. Now, I'm going to ask Mary to lead off. This was an initiative on her part. I think richly deserved. And I'm going to ask her to lead off if she would.
Thank you, Jerry. I think the board received comments from one or two members of the public about this issue. And I had my own personal experience trying to shop at a local business where a number of people were not wearing masks, although that particular business did say, we would like you to wear masks. I talked to some other people, Shelburne people, who told me similar stories where the store says, please wear a mask. People don't necessarily honor it. And the store is really without any power to really force it. I mean, you're sort of asking, in many cases, a store clerk to ask a patron to wear a mask or to not serve a patron who's not wearing a mask. So I think it's a problem for our businesses. And I think the feedback I've gotten is businesses would actually appreciate a strong statement, governmental statement, to wear a mask. That combined with what I think we're learning now from the CDC, that it's the aspiration from people talking with one another in close confines inside spaces that exposes us to most risk. I understand the governor hasn't yet issued such a statewide order, but I think it's appropriate for the town of Shelburne to do the same. I note that Burlington has done it. South Burlington has done it. I did speak with a Burlington city councilor the other day, and she suggested if we wanted to really improve, we would require businesses to have somebody, basically a bouncer at the door. I'm not in favor of that, because I'm not in favor of stirring conflict. And the other thing I wanted to add, and Mike would know this too, because he was at the BCA meeting last night, there's real concern among election officials about how to handle everybody coming in to vote on August 11th. And so for all those reasons, I think it's prudent that we as public officials take hopefully a unified stance and order that people visiting establishments, accommodations, and businesses in Shelburne wear a mask. I think most people are, and I think that's great. And I also think we could do more of a public campaign for this as well on Front Porch Forum and maybe in the Shelburne News. But I very much would like us to vote in favor of an emergency order that would require people to wear cloth face coverings or shields over their nose and mouth while inside the building of any business or establishment. I prefer a short order, and that's why my personal preference, based on the orders that Lee included in our packet, is for the town of Manchester order. It's very short, easy to read, and stores could post it on their doors so that people would know that it is. I would go further, rather than just call it a public health notice, I would call it a public health notice and emergency order from the town of Shelburne. So people, and then we can announce all of that in public spaces like Front Porch Forum, et cetera. So that's where I was coming from and asking that this be included on our agenda, and I hope everybody will support it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. Mike, you want to comment?
Yeah, no, I support this. I feel like I was trying to urge us a little bit earlier to go more strongly towards requirement. And I do favor something simple and straightforward. I am curious about sort of scope and, just indoor establishments, I think seems right, but I'm curious about scope, and I'm curious about thoughts about enforcement. I'm not bothered by the enforcement issue, but I do think that's something to at least we should at least consider or maybe talk about or at least ask Lee. Or I'm not really sure what a violation of this entails. So if a business owner has somebody in the establishment who refuses to wear a mask, and I don't know, I've seen a lot of crazy videos online of people going berserk about being told to wear a mask. I mean, what does that actually entail? So I'm just curious about that. But I'm all for this. Particularly because it's such a low cost requirement. It's really not asking people to do anything extraordinary or difficult. It seems like such a basic issue. And I also have to say, I think once schools start, once college kids come back, We need to have these kinds of practices pretty well buttoned down. I think things are going to change dramatically in Vermont, or there's potential for that. So I think we should be ahead of that curve. So I support it.
Thank you, Mike. Kate?
Yeah, I am wholeheartedly in favor of this. And thank you, Mary, for doing all this work and pulling this together. I, perhaps similar to you, had an experience actually just yesterday at Trader Joe's, where somebody got in line right by me and was not wearing a mask. And it was a very uncomfortable experience. And once the person was let into the store and, had to be, I witnessed employees sort of reasoning with this person to wear a mask. And he was sort of shunned like a pariah by everybody else who was wearing a mask. And I found myself thinking, this is not fair to put someone who is an employee in that position. And I thought, I was just really glad that this was going to be a discussion topic. And I think that our establishments sort of, we need their back, on this if something comes up. So I am very supportive of this and appreciate it.
Thank you, Kate. Jamie?
I agree. I'm also fully supportive for all the reasons that Mary articulated. And thank you, Mary, for prioritizing this. I think, clearly drastic times call for somewhat drastic measures. And, I know this can be perceived as, a bit of an infringement on personal liberties, but I think clearly the public health concerns outweigh any perceived personal liberty infringement. So I do agree we should just look at the scope here. I think there's pros and cons to a short form versus, what maybe a little bit more self-serving language and sort of anchoring the statutory or executive order justifications like South Burlington did. Not very concerned about enforcement. We're not a first mover here, as everybody has mentioned. So feel pretty good about that piece. I think we should just all try to align on the scope of this here. I think the exceptions vary a little bit at the margins. So maybe that's where we start once the chair has an opportunity to weigh in.
Thank you, Jamie. My own view, Mary and I shared some thoughts with Lee at one point, and I thought one of the major advantages of the Manchester notice was its brevity. It's certainly very understandable. It does lack, however, some features which, thinking about it ever since, I've wondered aren't critical. For instance, sunsetting. Instructions of a kind to businesses as to how to proceed. The expression of empathy that I thought in the Montpelier piece was a critical ingredient. This is not an enforceable law so much as it is an appeal to the civility of everybody. And I thought Montpelier's language in that extent was pretty important. So I gradually came to the point where I felt we could, in order to meet the brevity requirement, we could probably abstract something in the nature of a broadside so that it could be posted on a door easily enough, but that we should we should probably provide something more thoughtful in the way of statutory base and state of Vermont policy base, as well as some indication of how long this goes on. And to that extent, I kind of migrated to Montpelier's, where obviously you'd have to eliminate the city of Montpelier reference to city charter. Is there any discussion as to how you want to proceed, gang? First of all, are there any comments in the public? Jessica or Mac or anyone?
Yeah, I would, this is Jessica Brumstead, and I'd just mention a couple of things. One is that I ran into this problem right inside of the Shelburne grocery store a couple of days ago, and I felt bad because the cashier said that they wouldn't wait on someone without a face mask, and the person with the face mask was seemed confused. And so it's hard on everyone involved. And a lot of times the cashiers are young and they feel even less able to speak up to an adult, an older adult. So I have gotten a lot of concerns from constituents who have written and said, why can't you just make it statewide? And that's something that the governor needs to do. And he's been pretty against doing that. But I did call the Vermont League of Cities and Towns, and they were looking in for to me. They know that of 11 towns, but they weren't sure how many more have passed similar ordinances at this point, because they hadn't looked into it in a couple of weeks. So in other words, because I don't have all the data behind the agenda, is there already a proposal on the table for passing an ordinance, or are you saying you're going to be looking into how to put that together?
What we've provided, Jessica, are the examples of Stowe, Manchester, South Burlington, and Montpelier, several of which are quite, the Montpelier and South Burlington are quite similar, almost clones. Manchester is a notification in a sense. It's a very brief statement. And it has the appearance of, and has a little more formal appearance, maybe even more authoritative in the sense of blang, you know, bang, this is the notice and this is what you have to do. And Stowe has a somewhat more, I took it to be a sharing of the problem and more appealing to folks than perhaps instructive or a directive. So I think most of us may, from the comments I gather, most of us probably took up Montpelier and South Burlington together. And then there's Manchester, which again is a half a page, straightforward. And I think we're all agreed that ordinance is not the way to go, that a notice and or a resolution is the way. So what how do you want to go, Bay, gang? Mike?
Well, can you help me understand the distinction between ordinance, and a resolution?
Well, the ordinance, first of all, just simply the process of developing an ordinance would take us well into September. It's just a time issue. Plus an ordinance would ordinarily include an enforcement provision. And we would have to sort out how that was going to be, what it would be, and how it would be implemented. But I think the two principal differences are it's a higher order of regulation. That is, it has an enforcement feature, and it would, and the time, the public hearings, and the time for development would take us well out into September at this point. Whereas a resolution is something we could agree and adopt on tonight and have it effective at the time of our meeting closes.
I think it's also the contemplated duration, right? I think an ordinance sort of is a longer term type of regulatory tool versus
it wouldn't be event driven. It'd be a fairly permanent addition to the body of town, right?
So if I might, Jerry, I'm sorry, Mike, you weren't done.
Well, I'm trying to get my head around the tooth in the resolution.
Yeah.
I had understood it would be an emergency order actually from the town manager. Is that right? Is that where the authority lies, Lee?
The other municipalities have all done it as a resolution or an order of their legislative bodies based on the governor's emergency order. So the other piece of it is essentially the legal backdrop. There may not be a statutory authority to enact an ordinance for this, but there's clearly the emergency orders give up.
Thank you. Yeah, perfect. Yeah.
But again, the time factor involved is important because my hope was if we found one of these amenable, we could agree to adopt one tonight, just simply changing any relevant language like names of towns and get it in place so it's effective immediately rather than something that's months out and maybe emergency order expires before we even get it in place.
Agreed.
Can I suggest then, given Jerry's well thought out comments, that we take the sign that you provided, that is used in the town offices, and just amend the language that's underneath the big red circle and say per select board resolution, or I would say per emergency select board resolution, all employees and visitors must wear a face mask or protective face covering when visiting this establishment. And then I'm perfectly fine adopting a resolution that's just like Montpelier's or any town that is to accomplish this purpose. And I agree, Jerry, if you put more data in there about the CDC, et cetera, and also a sunset provision, the sunset provision I would recommend be until further order or until rescinded, because like Mike has pointed out, we have no idea. I think all of us are sort of bracing ourselves for a potential surge in the fall. So I would say until further order of the select board.
If you want to put that in the form of a motion, Mary?
I'd be happy to, unless anybody else wants to weigh in with other thoughts. No? Okay.
I like that approach.
Okay, so I would move that tonight the select board adopt an emergency resolution to require that face masks or protective face coverings be worn by all employees and visitors of businesses and establishments in the town of Shelburne, that the resolution be modeled after Montpelier's, and that we distribute signs to all businesses in Shelburne that are short and simple, modeled after the sign provided by Lee in our packet tonight, which is, I understand, posted in the town offices. I do think I imagine Montpelier's has this, I just don't recall. There should be exceptions for children, for adults with medical issues, and then also for businesses where there's no more than, you know, for one-on-one businesses where you can distance. I'm sure that's in the Montpelier resolution. Does that fairly capture it, Lee, for your purposes? You're looking.
Yeah, I'm just looking for the Montpelier one, but I'm sure we can modify it accordingly and get it in place.
My sense of it, what Mary is suggesting adapting the Montpelier one is a sort of a supplemental to an initial thrust, which takes graphic form and is immediate and has, again, the advantage of brevity. There's science, but there's no rocket science as to a mask and a picture of it, and please mask. I mean, it's pretty straightforward. But I think, I agree, Mary, I think something immediate or that can be made immediate would be very helpful, supplemented by a longer document that lays out the basis for the decision, the expectation of its duration, and then some critical features like references to standards and as well exceptions.
Right. I think if you were to post a resolution such as Montpelier's on the storefront of a store, people wouldn't notice it. I really like the mask that Lee has provided us, and I think it's effective.
No, I agree. It has to be kind of a two-part, and it can the graphic can just refer to the complete resolution for anybody who's interested in it. Maybe that kind of a
yes
approach.
Yeah, I would say per resolution adopted on July 14 by the
copies
town of Shelburne,
which are available.
Exactly.
Okay, Lee.
Yeah, I think I just have one comment. It might be a technical comment, but I do think we somehow need to reference that the strongly encourage existing resolution goes away, right? That it's sort of rescinded as of the date that this is adopted.
This
otherwise,
it.
You have the public sort of thinking, well, you have one out there that says strongly encourage.
Good point. forgot well, we that could we even put had that, it.
Yeah. We could put that in the if we adapt the Montpelier, we could put that in the effective period and just
I would just put it at the end somewhere. Yeah, just add a sentence that this references that resolution and the date.
Supersedes that prior policy. Exactly. The Montpelier, just to confirm, Montpelier does include those types of exceptions that Mary referenced and has a statement about its length of duration as well.
I think this is a really good two-step, a very graphic, immediate impact kind of statement with a reference to a resolution which contains a lot of other useful information and is available on, you know, at request or something along those lines. I think that makes a lot of sense, yeah.
Jerry, I'd like to thank Lee for putting all of that together so quickly. And clearly Lee had been thinking about it as well because he responded immediately to my email with all of these resolutions and the sign and all that. So I really appreciated Lee's very quick and thorough response to my request.
All right, Mary has moved. Is there a second?
I'll second. Mike's got it.
Jamie seconds. Any further discussion? Any discussion from those attending, participating? Hearing none, those approving, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And those disapproving, nay. The ayes have it unanimously. Thank you. And thank you again, Mary, for your initiative.
I would like to suggest, I didn't get a chance to jump in. I would like to suggest that maybe you put that resolution in the front porch forum. So then people, when they get to a storefront, aren't surprised to see the sign and show up without a mask.
Yes, I think that's a good idea, Joyce. And because this would be effective this date, and it would be pretty soon that we would have some of the graphics available, and front porch would make a really good sense, a really good an outreach. Thanks, Joyce. That's a good idea.
Thank you.
Any other discussion?
Just to suggest Shelburne News as well, obviously. And maybe Lee, if that were something you would undertake, you could ask why they haven't been covering the select board meetings the past two meetings. So
I'm kept them informed fully about our agendas, the Zoom details, hoping to encourage and strongly urge their coverage.
Thank you.
I'm sure Lee, given our membership in the Shelburne Business and Professional Association, I'm sure Lee will put his head together with Roz as well, and ask Roz to distribute what we've done and try to enlist support and interest in the part of the business community, as well, importantly, establish a communication back in terms of suggestions and ideas and problem solving such as may occur when this hits the street. So thank you, everybody. Any further discussion? Hearing none. The next item is the Financial Advisory Committee, a question of its continued status and role. Dom Porter is with us tonight. I took the opportunity to send a starter for the discussion sometime over the weekend. But Lee, do you want to introduce this? And then maybe Don, you want to speak to it? And then we'll have questions from the board.
Thanks. Well, it's certainly good timing. As we all are aware, the Financial Advisory Committee put a lot of time and effort into some background analysis and advising the select board and Peter and myself about financial issues in light of risks posed by the pandemic. And we made some pretty significant progress. Now is a great time in this interim transition to determine, would you like to keep the committee alive? Might the other extreme would be disbanding it? I haven't heard any suggestion for that. And if we keep it alive, does it become a more permanent standing committee, and what its roles might be in continuing to advise us on upcoming matters that face the town short, medium, and long term? Mr. Chair had put together some ideas on how the committee might continue to be helpful. I've put a few together. Don and I have shared some ideas back and forth. And as you note, he's on the air tonight, and I'm sure he'll have some thoughts as well.
Thank you, Lee. Don?
Lee captured, I think, lots of the things that we would want to do if we did have a finance committee. We're a community of 3,300 households at this point in time, a small community, but we have big city financial issues currently and in the future. So I think it just makes good sense, good policy sense to have a resource that Lee, Peter, Select Board can draw on to weigh in on some of these issues. And that ranges from economic development to zoning issues, to fee levels, to financial audits, interaction with the business community and other entities we would want to engage in a type of financial discourse. So I think it makes a lot of sense to have that be a permanent resource for the town.
Thank you, Don. Mike, you want to respond?
I think it's a great idea. I will say there's a lot being asked, and that looks like a lot of work. And I think we need to think about what exactly we task them with. Not to undermine or suggest that anything that you wrote, Mr. Chair, wasn't appropriate, but I can foresee that being a heavy lift. So I would also just add that we have some large capital expenses on the horizon. The biggest one, obviously, is our wastewater project, which we've been sort of talking about and has gotten to the back burner. I mean, the larger ways, not the Route 7, but the overall project, not to mention the firehouse and other, big ticket items. And it would be really helpful, I think, to have a committee like that for advice and sort of insight into how to manage those sorts of things, which is an area of expertise of Don's, I know. But, I would suggest as well that the committee or Don and Lee, and I'd also like to hear Peter's input on this, maybe work out kind of a scoping document of some sort or just, what exactly would the scope be and how would it function? I just worry that, we're going to foist an awful lot of work onto that committee and I don't want to overtax them. But I totally support it. They've been extremely helpful and the resource has been excellent.
Thanks, Mike. Mary?
I agree with what Mike said. And I am, hang on, I just got to get to full screen. I went to half screen so that I could post on Front Porch Forum about the resolution. So I agree. And I would say I had the experience in Burlington of Burlington has its own finance. It's a standing finance committee. And in the city of Burlington, and maybe this is apples and oranges, but even Don just mentioned we have the same problems that even big cities have. The standing finance committee in the city of Burlington is regarded in the city council and city government as the single most important committee that meets every Monday and discusses all these issues, Mike, that you were talking about. And obviously that's what we do, right? Every other Tuesday in a way, but we do that and everything else. So at this time, there's no question that having this kind of expertise is going to be helpful. And to have it as a standing committee, I don't see how that can hurt us to have more boots on the ground doing this kind of thing. It's something to actually kind of be proud of. It's really participatory democracy, isn't it? So I am all for it. And we're lucky to have people like Don and the community, people who come together. I'm reminded of all of the work that people did when we were looking for a town manager. That kind of volunteerism that we have in our town is something that I'm personally very proud of. So, yeah.
Thanks, Mary.
Thank you.
Kate?
I would just want to say, for starters, I'm just so grateful, Don, that you and your committee are interested in continuing to play a role. It's been a little weird to start, you know, one's political life in a global pandemic. I had one real life meeting before we went to Zoom, and you know, so anyway, but I don't know any better, right? This is just what I know. So it's all good. But I think that, you know, what I've seen just in my brief tenure is just how incredibly helpful what your group has done in the analysis has been in assisting us to integrate these broad goals. And I for myself, it's been, you know, I'm just trying to get up to speed and be somebody who can contribute and in a, you know, hopefully somewhat meaningful way as a member of this board. And it's been to have that financial sort of snapshot and the adjustments based on the new information coming in has been just extraordinarily helpful for me. So I think that it would be wonderful. How zoning supports or detracts from some of these goals, how in the ways that I think Lee was sort of framing earlier tonight, the wearing the mask. I mean, all of these it's all iterative, right? It all is working to a kind of common purpose. And, you know, and I think we're sort of in some uncharted waters here, and having your to be able to draw on your expertise is just amazing. I guess I am a little concerned, like Mike, about, you know, I don't know, for lack of a better term, the jurisdictional creep that sort of might happen over time. So it might be helpful if you and your group were to you know, kind of set up a framework for how you see yourselves, the role that you would play and what the, you know, the guardrails around it, that sort of thing. Because, you know, we'll just suck the life out of you otherwise.
Thanks, Kate.
Well,
Jamie?
I'm going to agree with everything that's been said. I'm fully supportive of a standing committee. Don and I have spoken a few times about this topic. And I concur with Mary. The more people we can get under the tent with policymaking, the better. You know, this is just an extension of the board, as every other board is, right, in a policymaking role, whether it's the Planning Commission or otherwise. So I think, again, I'm a broken record on this, but I'm always blown away by the talent and just expertise that we have with residents in this town, and that sort of willingness to put their hand up and help. So I'm sensitive to bandwidth, and I do think it's appropriate for us to just give folks on the current committee the opportunity to step down and sort of reassemble that committee, whether we put, you know, a formal call out to reassemble this in some ways. I think it's been a lot. You know, there's so much work that's been done already by the advisory committee that I'm also conscious of just letting folks step aside if that's what they'd like to do. So as far as the scope goes, I'm not overly concerned about scope creep necessarily. I think as long as we frame the charter, for lack of a better word, as just a laundry list of, you know, tasks that may be assigned by the select board, as opposed to a concrete list that is their exclusive jurisdiction, let's say. So I think as long as we frame it with that, you know, flexibility to allow us to assign certain topics as needed, then we should be fine. So
Jamie, if I could add to that, I thought that Lee's little summary in his annotated agenda kind of captured what that scope would likely be, and then possibly, and we could add in as other issues come up, that as referred, that the select board may also refer to the financial committee. Possibly.
Yeah, I agree. I think Jerry's list was great too.
That email. That's right. I forgot about
his email.
That, yeah.
So, you know, between the two of those, if we could just start to sketch out bullet points and frame whatever that charter is for this committee, then.
Can I ask, before I, sorry, Mike. Well, I'm just curious. I mean, a standing committee is a regular committee. Is that correct?
as opposed to a temporary or an advisory committee, single purpose advisory committee.
So adding to our CBCs a finance committee.
Yes, correct.
Go ahead, Mike.
Well, if that's the case, right, put out a call, we need to handle this the way we do all other CBCs, correct? So does that
right. The intent isn't just to, my sense of it is we're agreed that, and once I've made my comments, we'll ask Peter and Lee to respond as well. My sense of it is we're answering the question of continuation by saying, yes, indeed, the effort should continue, and it should continue in the form of a standing committee versus a pro tem body that was generated in order to help deal with the financial and fiscal consequences of the pandemic. That secondly, and I think it's a really good idea, a sense that Lee, with Don's help and whomever else on the committee might be as interested to help to develop a scope or mission statement or something along those lines for our consideration at a next meeting. That could include some more detail about how many members. It could include some responses, some early responses, Mike, to a call for interest. It could include a survey of current members, Don, as to their interest or willingness to continue serving. We could put all that together as a furtherance of the idea, having established that we should have a standing committee called a finance committee tonight. That to me would seem to make a lot of sense. The pandemic really overshadows, not only in terms of time, but in terms of energy, as we all are well aware, of such activities as budget analysis, which is coming quickly. So there is an understandable sense that this committee could be overloaded quickly, given that many of us, I think, are feeling that the pandemic is in no short-term event at this moment. So the mission statement, or as Jamie suggests, the goal statement is going to have to reflect the time and energy considerations of the continued response to the pandemic. So if that is sort of our sense, that we say we are going to continue, we're going to continue it in the form of a standing committee. We'll come back next meeting with some more detail and some more information, including some input from Don and the committee. And to that general idea, Peter, how do you respond?
I'm certainly supportive of taking advantage of the resources that we do have in the community to help us with financial issues, which are obviously getting more complicated as we go along. I guess my only comment would just be to be clear on the responsibilities of staff versus committee versus select board. I'd want to make sure we can still stay on a track of resolving issues that need to be resolved quickly in a timely manner. And just again, the responsibility of staff in terms of working with, you know, the financial advisory committee, responsibilities that staff has on an ongoing basis, and just working on that so that we can work as efficiently as possible together.
Does it?
Thank you, Peter. Lee?
Yeah, I would echo Peter's concerns. There are still going to be some things we just need to deal with, and we may not always be able to take advantage of that expertise. The other part of it is, and I say this with some trepidation, but as you know, I have not been a fan of adding more committees, because each committee adds another administrative workload as well. However, this committee has proven its worth, and absent fiscal health of the town, none of the other committees matter at all. We can't do anything if we don't have our fiscal house in order. So I think this one's an important one. We'll just need to evolve a reasonable working relationship so that we can all still do the jobs we need to do and not just always be in meetings.
Yeah, I mean, I feel the same way about the formality of the committee as you do, Lee, as far as just adding more staffing. And I also think, you know, the more formal it is and the more regular the meetings are, the fewer people that may be interested. You know, sometimes just the time commitment turns people away from doing this kind of work. So I'd sort of look to Don and Peter and the team to tell us what the appropriate cadence is for this group to meet. And I don't know if there's any way to sort of avoid that, you know, open meeting law constraint with having to formalize everything, but I think it needs to happen. I share the same concern as you do, though.
And we all have to be sensitive to Lee's and in this case, Peter's time as well. This is meant to be a resource, not a demand on them. And while we also would agree that all of our committees have a demonstrated worth, the special circumstances that we have been, in which we've been engaged for a period of time now, I think have shown the extraordinary value of fresh eyes and minds addressing issues that were equally important to social consequences, and I think it I think the efforts of the committee and Lee and Peter are even now in retrospect have been critical in what I believe has been a very positive response by Shelburne to the pandemic and its consequences, and as well as an ongoing enthusiasm and expertise that from which we're all benefiting. So, if my sense of it is that we continue their effort as a standing committee, the mission statement or goal statement of which we would expect Don to work together with Lee on, with certainly input from any of us who are interested. And we'll come back to the matter of the actual structure of the committee, our expectations of it at our next meeting. Is that agreeable to everybody?
Yes.
Is there a motion to that effect?
So moved. Oh,
second. Moved by Mike, seconded by?
Mary.
And any further discussion? Don, it's not too late to.
All for a very good cause.
Not too late to put a cow in the middle of the rail, you know, the rail line, you know.
No. My suggestion would be that we get input from select board, from
SBPA,
Peter, yeah. SBPA,
yeah.
We're all in this together, guys, and let's get all the input, and then we prioritize based on what we see as the most pressing matters first.
Yeah. And if we have this focal
point, we can make it manageable.
Abstract tonight, it doesn't mean that we have to have this all finished on the 28th. It may be that we go into another meeting and fine tune. So
yeah, absolutely.
Thank you, Don. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those approving, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. And those opposed, nay. The ayes have it unanimously. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Moved by Kate, seconded by Mary. And any discussion? Hearing none, those approving, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. And those opposed, nay. Thank you, everybody. Stay safe. And we'll see you in 2 weeks.
All right. Good night.
Thank you.
Right now.
All right.